Welcome to another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast, Team Preview Edition. I'm your host, Randy Haynes, joined as always by my friend Colin Weatherwax. Colin, we're talking about the Oakland Athletics today.
I am so excited. it's just another team in my division that I get to root against, so.
Yeah, and it's there's some sneaky interesting guys on this roster here, but then there's also some, at least from a fantasy aspect, just some complete wastelands that we will get to as things go along here. One of those wastelands is behind the dish for the Athletics, where they currently have Josh Fegley and Chris Herman. Herman is somebody that has had some hot stretches with the bat before, but has never really been able to stick into playing time. Are either one of these guys anything outside of AL only? I don't see them being on mixed radar because I also think the Athletics will, you know, probably at some point add another veteran guy in there maybe. I mean, this is a team that made the playoffs last year, so you'd think they'd want to keep trying to compete, and it looks like they are going to continue to compete. Sean Murphy's a top prospect that you and I have talked about since we just recently traded him in RFD, but he's also not on the 40-man. A's catcher, you just staying away this year?
Yeah, and actually Sean Murphy is the highest drafted of the three that you mentioned at a whopping pick 675. So he is definitely free, as are all the other ones for the Athletics. So I fell in the Chris Herman trap before, just thinking that he might get some more playing time and therefore the bat would play, but it just hasn't happened as of yet. Josh Fegley is a replacement level catcher. So yeah, this whole situation is AL only.
Moving on to Matt Olson, who you and I were speaking about just before we hopped on air here, and when you told me what his current draft price is currently, I think you said around 107, I said, oh, I like Matt Olson a little bit, but I'm not interested in that draft price. And then we talked about it's kind of a result of the state of first base, so my gut tells me that I'm not going to pay that price, but the more I maybe dig into things, maybe with the state of first base, Olson was an okay buy there. Is that kind of the way you're leaning, or are you more in on Matt Olson kind of regardless of the state of first base?
Yeah, I'm actually in on him. I really like the price point. I like the what I saw last year. I think a lot of people went into last year hoping to get a little bit more than what he provided, just based off of his hot stretch in 2017 towards the end of the year. But overall, for the whole year, he still almost got you 30 home runs, 85 RBIs with a 250 average. So didn't tank you anywhere. And he's a guy that I'm actually targeting going into draft season. He's right at the end of the tier. So he's the 11th first baseman off the board. The two guys behind him are Jerkson Profar and Edwin Encarnacion. And then for me, in my opinion, it drops off the table with guys like Ian Desmond, Eric Hosmer, Miggy Cabrera. So if I miss out on some of the top guys, or if I want to solidify my corner infield spot in a 15-team leaguer, then I'm definitely going out of my way to get Matt Olson.
Yeah, some of the guys you named behind him, I might take the discount and take Encarnacion, especially if he ends up elsewhere. You know, Profar, if you're taking him, you're probably not taking him to be your first baseman, or if he, you know, if he ends up at first base for you throughout the season with his multi-position eligibility. We'll talk about him here in a second. It just kind of speaks to how weak first base kind of is this year. I mean, going in front of him, you know, is Abreu and Gallo, guys I would much rather have. I do think there is, for me at least, there's a decent drop off before Matt Olson. You know, we saw the real hot 2017. He helped win some people some leagues, and I was a little surprised that he was able to continue and play. I think he played all 162 last year. He stayed in the lineup for the entire season and provided nice power. It's just not a profile I'm really in love with, and not somebody that you think of when you think of first base and fantasy, but it kind of just speaks more to what the landscape of first base is heading into draft season here. Let's talk about Profar, traded over from your Texas Rangers. Scheduled to play at second base, he comes in already with first, third, and short eligibility into 2019, so he's also going to pick up second base most likely. Could be a huge asset in daily lineup leagues, and then even in NFBC 15-team leagues where you can move him every week depending on some injuries. Are you paying the draft price that is just outside the top 100 for Jerkson Profar?
I don't think I can pay that draft price. Like you said, he's slotted to play second base for them. However, he did not play that position last year, so it might take him, you know, in between 10 to 20 games, depending on your league format, to gain that eligibility. So just based off of his ADP around pick 116, he's going after the likes of D. Gordon, right before Robinson Cano, Ruben Odor, somewhere around that range. But even though I'm a huge fan of Jerickson Profar, I really liked what I saw last year. I was hoping that Texas would just let him play every day, which I thought the opportunity was there finally for him. But they traded him over to Oakland. I still think he has a everyday playing time role moving forward. And I just think that that draft price is kind of already set for him. People are already seeing the opportunity. They saw a mini breakout last year, and they're already paying for that price for him to produce, so there's not much of a discount. If I can get him somewhere around my maximum pick on NFBC around 165, I'd feel a little bit more comfortable because, like you said, you can move him around the whole diamond, and he's really valuable in like a 15-team league that way.
Yeah, the positional eligibility has value in any size league, but especially in a 15-team. I like Profar, and he's still just going to be 26 this season, which doesn't seem possible considering it feels like we've been talking about him for a decade. But this kind of has a little bit of like some Marwin Gonzalez vibes from last draft season, where the numbers were decent and you loved the position eligibility, but the position eligibility, for me at least, is kind of driving the price up fairly decent. I don't think I'm going to be owning a lot of shares of Profar if he's still going, between pick 100 and 120, their stats that you're going to be able to find, much later in your draft. And you're, like I said, you're really just paying the premium for his position eligibility, which has value. I don't want to downplay the value. It's just not something, around pick 100, that's still a pretty significant piece to building your team. And I'm not taking a guy there just because I like his flexibility throughout the season. So I don't think I'll be owning too much of Jerickson Profar this year. Somebody that I do think I'll be owning a good bit of this year, and someone I've owned a lot of in the past, is Marcus Semien, somebody that's really kind of stabilized. He hasn't really quite reached the upside. When he was traded over from the White Sox to the Athletics, he's somebody that was known as one of the worst defenders in the league. He's kind of quietly turned into he's not going to win a Gold Glove anytime soon, but he's not an albatross out there. That'll keep him in the lineup. He's pretty much a lock for like 15-15 at this point. Do you think there's more to Marcus Semien? Is it somebody that it kind of speaks to the depth of middle infield, and you think he's one of maybe a handful of other guys? Because I've heard that going around so far this year.
Yeah, he's kind of like a backup middle infielder in my opinion. I think, he's been quote-unquote safe for the past couple of years, but he always has that little injury that nags at him for most of the year. And you don't really get to see, the 2016 numbers where he almost had 30 home runs and basically had a full, workload. And then looking back at last year, he had 632 at-bats, which is by far his career high. But he only had 15 home runs, 70 RBIs, 14 steals. So a 15-15 guy isn't too bad for your middle infield spot. And then a 255 average, which won't tank you as well. I just don't see the upside, and they have a few guys lower in the system. They have Franklin Barreto, they have a Jorge Mateo, a couple guys that have bigger upside that I think that they would just throw Marcus Semien to the wayside and give them the opportunity if they're showing out in the minors. And he's also a guy that I think a contender would be looking to trade for as their backup infielder. And if Oakland falls out of the race relatively soon, they could sell him off. Or he could, get injured and one of those guys could just steal a spot. So that's the only thing that I worry about with Marcus Semien is he has that role now, but I think he could easily fall out of favor.
Yeah, I think, and when you're choosing your middle infield spot, it's kind of, like we've talked about, it is pretty deep. And he's going around guys like Jorge Polanco, Joey Wendell, Willie Adames, Andrelton Simmons, Lourdes Gurriel, whose stock just recently may have taken a hit with signing of Freddie Galvis, maybe not. Kettle Marte, Chris Taylor, somebody that's interesting, but also has outfield eligibility. Eduardo Escobar is going ahead of him, and I would much rather have Marcus Semien. Going right around him is Joey Wendell. I'll I'll take Simeon. Adames, I think, is kind of close. So when you're getting that, when you're getting down in that range, it kind of just comes out to personal preference. You know, maybe if you think you're, if you think you've taken some batting average risk, maybe you go Andrelton Simmons over him. But some Simeon is just somebody that I like. I still is somebody that was on him pretty early. I'd like to think there's still some more power upside there at some point. Maybe we never get a chance to see it. Maybe the 27 that he hit in 2016, like you mentioned, ends up being his career high. But Simeon is still just a nice value that you can get around pick 200 to fill in your middle, or if you end up grabbing two, you know, better second basemen, he can fill in nicely as a shortstop. Third base is another guy that's pretty interesting, and that's Matt Chapman, somebody whose draft price has gone up pretty good for this year, considering the numbers were nice last year, but he was very hot and cold. There was an injury there, but it hasn't shot through the roof like I thought maybe it would. Where are you at on Matt Chapman heading into 2019?
Yeah, I'm also surprised that he hasn't made his way into like the top 10 discussion at third base. Right now, he's the 15th third baseman off the board, sandwiched between Max Muncy and Will Myers. So, you know, I kind of like the draft price. Whenever you look at the overall ADP, it's right around Matt Olson's, so right at pick 111. So if you're looking for a corner at that time, if you're looking to, you know, man one of the third base or first base positions, I really like both the Mats on this team. Honestly, I really think that the power potential is there for both of them to hit over 30 home runs with a healthy season. The runs and RBI should be there with Chris Davis behind them, also with Jerickson Profar in front of them. So these are two guys that, you know, they're not as sexy as the top 10 at their position, but if you end up with either of them, it's not a huge fall off from the tier.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. Third base is pretty deep this year. And again, it's, I don't want to say it's personal preference when you're still, you know, spending a pick that's going around the, you know, 100 to 120 range. But, you know, it's kind of, do you want to take, roll the dice on like a Will Myers who's going around that range, Travis Shaw, Al for some positional flexibility. I personally would rather take Matt Chapman over Josh Donaldson. Kind of leaning towards pretty much any day of the week, especially at that price. I'm just not big on Donaldson this year. You know, but we saw it last year with the 24 home runs. We're seeing the power. I don't see him continuing the 278 batting average, but I don't think he's going to crater your batting average either. And the glove is going to keep him in there every day that he is healthy, because he is one of the best defensive third basemen in the league. So you have that going for you. It's a very stable commodity. Taking him, you know, around pick 112 right now over the last month of drafts. So it's not something I don't think I'm going to own a lot of shares, but I would like to get one or two shares. But I could also see a scenario where we're doing these team previews next year, and Chapman's had a big power breakout, and we were talking about Chapman as potentially a top 75 pick. I could definitely see that happening this time next year. Let's move into the outfield. It's a little crowded, but there's some other guys that are kind of interesting, maybe that are going to have to start the year in AAA. One omission real quick before we move into the outfield is Chris Davis, who will not have outfield eligibility this year. Does that matter for you, the fact that Chris Davis will not start the season with outfield eligibility and would probably need at least two injuries, I would think, to even have a chance at regaining eligibility in season?
Yeah, I mean, it worries me a little bit. It kind of reminds me of like Nelson Cruz, just a guy that probably doesn't really belong in the field. And if you've seen Chris Davis play the outfield, you understand why he's not eligible. So right now he's the 30th hitter off the board, going in between Anthony Rendon, Adalberto Mondesi, which is just funny to say. But you know, his price is just about right, and If you look at his stats over the past 3 years, I mean, it doesn't get much more consistent than that. And I know it's been talked about pretty much everywhere about, you know, Mr. 247. You know that you're going to get that with the average. Over 40 home runs the past 3 years, over 100 RBIs. So you pretty much know what you're going to get from Chris Davis. It is another year older, but I'm perfectly fine with paying the price. You know, I haven't ended up with him yet, but I definitely don't have anything against drafting Chris Davis on my team.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, we brought up the fact that he doesn't have outfield eligibility. He shouldn't. I mean, the Athletics are doing the right thing by,
yes, it's awful,
in the field as little as possible. Personally, for me, I I could care less if he has UT only. It doesn't bother me whatsoever. I will gladly take a guy that has a chance to lead the league in home runs at pick 46. You know, every day of the week, I'll gladly take that. I'm fine with paying the price. You know, the 247th batting average, it's hilarious that he's been able to do that, you know, 4 years in a row now, the exact same number of batting average. And considering, you know, what we know about batting average is that it has the tendency to fluctuate the most among certain players. And, you know, but Davis, you know, as long as the health is there, he has a chance to lead the league in home runs. Because the lineup isn't quite as good as some of the, you know, the premium power hitters that are going around or two ahead of him, like a Judge and like Stanton, you're taking a little bit of a discount on the runs, but he's got a chance to lead the league in home runs. The RBIs are going to follow. I'm good with taking Chris Davis, like I said, regardless of whether he's outfield or DH. So guys that actually do have outfield eligibility, let's start with Nick Martini, somebody that came kind of really was off the radar, somebody that was let go by St. Louis at the end of 2017, made a nice little splash in the second half. Are you interested in Nick Martini at all, or do you think that this needs to be somebody else that we're going to talk about here soon?
Yeah, it's probably going to be somebody else. I mean, he's a guy, like you said, he jumped off the page a little bit towards the end of the season, but he only had one home run, zero steals. He hit 300, but this is a guy that's already 28 years old, so he's not really a prospect per se. And even the guys at NFBC, they're not even drafting him. He's the sixth of sixth outfielders taken off of the Oakland A's. So yeah, he's not really draftable in the AL only, I guess, but I think there'll be someone else that just comes up and performs a little bit better than him.
Yeah, so let's talk about the guy that I think both of us would like to see actually have that job instead of Nick Martini, and that's Dustin Fowler, somebody that got an opportunity last year and really didn't cash in at the plate, only hit six home runs, six steals, hit .224, OBP was down to .256. That's nothing that's going to get you too excited. Are we buying in on a bounce back on Fowler, or are we going to be we're just going to have to kind of wait and see how things go in season? Maybe he ends up getting everyday playing time. Are we writing him off until 2020? Where are you at on Dustin Fowler?
I'm perfectly fine taking a flyer on him and as like the last round pick in a best ball or in AL only, because right now he's being drafted overall at pick number 564. So there's no price tag attached to him as opposed to last year when, you know, he was supposed to, you know, break out. And he was a highly regarded prospect with the Yankees before he had a devastating injury, but he's completely healed from that. He should have every opportunity to beat out a guy like Nick Martini or the next guy we're going to talk about, Ramon Laureano. So I'm probably going to jump back in the well on Justin Fowler and make sure that I own him at least a couple places.
Yeah, I agree. I'd like to get myself at least a share or two. Like you're talking about, that's the kind of the perfect format would be a draft and hold or a best ball. Because he is somebody that there has already been buzz about him. He's already on the radar of every serious fantasy player. So if he were to end up with the job, he's going to go for a lot on in-season fab. So he might be somebody that I'm going to have to keep my shares, just like I said, to draft and holds in best balls for 2019. Let's talk about Ramon Laureano, who, like you just brought up, another guy kind of like Nick Martini. He was kind of came out of nowhere, started to really play well in the second half, helped the A's get to the playoffs. Nine home runs, seven steals, hit .270, .340 OBP. I think he has a better chance of sticking it than Martini does, but I'm not buying it. I know there's really not a draft price, attached to him, but I'm just going to pass and take a flyer on another guy that's got a more interesting profile later in my draft.
Yeah, I think I'll do the same. The one thing with Laureano is he has a defense that might be able to keep him in the lineup every day. So completely opposite of Chris Davis. You know, his defense is going to keep him in, but there's really relatively no offense. So he's a guy that might get you 10 home runs, 10 steals. The .288 average that he had last year is most likely going to be a fluke. I would probably project him around .260 to .270. So he is only 24, so he doesn't have the age that Nick Martini does, but there is actually a draft price associated with him. In ADP on NFBC, he's going at pick 194 over the last month. So, like you said, I'll probably take a flyer on some other guy in that range with probably more upside, with less to worry about as far as, you know, losing the job. So, Yeah, I'll probably stay away from the Loreno sweepstakes.
Yeah, that's interesting that his price has creeped up inside the top 200. Not that that's, like I said, not that that's a premium pick, but it's still, I'm a little surprised that it has crept up that high.
Yeah, I mean, there's guys going after him like Jose Martinez, Kyle Schwarber, Adam Eaton, Trey Mancini. Those are guys that I probably won't draft, but I would definitely draft ahead of
Yeah,
Romero. So just the upside.
Schwarber, and Eaton especially. Eaton's somebody that's, in my opinion, is a clearly better player. The only issue is going to be with health, but at a pick that late, I'll take the guy that has a chance of Eaton, somebody that has a chance if he can get 145 games in, could easily be a top 100 player. Where I don't really see the path with Lariana for that. If he's, even if he does keep that job all season, so. Let's move on to Stephen Piscotty, somebody that a lot of people are aware of the situation. He was traded from the Cardinals to the Athletics to, be near his mother, who had Alzheimer's at the time. His mother unfortunately passed away during the season, and Piscotty was somebody that got off to a really slow start. Again, obviously there's a mental aspect to the game that we can't begin to know what was going on in Piscotty's head and going on in his personal life. Only hit three home runs for the first 2 months of the season, was probably cut in some leagues, but then June started to hit, he hit 300, knocked four home runs, but then at the second half was when things really started to pick up. Eight home runs in July, four in August, and then eight more in September, leading into October. Is Stephen Piscotty somebody that the second half is what we're going to see, or is he going to continue to be somebody that, like he was when he was in St. Louis? He had some really hot stretches, and then he had some other times where he was kind of unplayable for weak stretches at a time.
Yeah, I think this is most likely his ceiling. The 27 home runs that he hit last year, almost 90 RBIs, a 270 average. I don't see a repeat in the home runs. The RBIs just kind of is based off of the team around him, which, like we've already said, the offense is there. But I just don't see it. I can't see him repeating those numbers. And to pay up for the price that he's going at right now, he's going eight picks ahead of a guy that we both like in Nomar Mazara, and I definitely can't make that decision. I see Stephen Piscotty as like outfielder number four for me, and his price is more in the outfielder number three range. And even the upside isn't comparable to Nomar Mazara to me.
Yeah, I definitely would take Mazara over Piscotty. Some of the guys that are going ahead of him, the last pod we did was the Rockies pod, and we talked about Ian Desmond. I will take Stephen Piscotty over Ian Desmond every day of the week. Billy Hamilton, again, if you're in the 150s, if you want to take the flyer on speed, you haven't drafted any yet, that's more of a roster construction kind of thing there. Harrison Bader, I think I would take Piscotty over because Bader is probably going to have some playing time, but the Cardinals are the Cardinals. That's a pretty crowded outfield. Byron Buxton, do you need the speed? That's kind of where I'm seeing there. But I would rather have Brandon Nimmo than Stephen Piscotty. I would also take him over a Hunter Renfroe, Corey Dickerson. So there's some guys that I could see getting a couple shares of Piscotty, but not too many. I think there's nothing wrong with a guy that can provide a decent OBP, get a decent enough average, and hit close to 30 home runs. And the A's lineup, it should be decent enough where the counting stats should be there, with Davis and with Chapman and Olsen, Semien, they've added Profar. So the lineup it's not amazing on paper, but it's gotten pretty deep over the last year or so. I'm okay with taking a stab, at Piscotty here. Outside of that, there's Mark Canha, somebody that is a short side platoon guy that has gotten some playing time over, when there's some injuries. Same thing with Chad Pinder. The A's like to platoon and mix and match. They're more DFS, daily lineup leagues, or if you're in an NFBC and you see the A's have a series, weekend series coming up where they've got three lefties, maybe you can slide Pinder or Canha in there, but they should not be on the redraft radar. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Canha is the prototypical DFS play whenever they're going up against a left-handed starter, like you said. I've actually tried to get him pried away from his FWFB 30 team owner, just so that way I can play the matchups in like a daily league. So in a daily league, Canha is more valuable, just because you can kind of throw him in there, and he's definitely going to perform against the lefties. So, but yeah, other than that, the only other guy I would say is Franklin Barreto. If there's a spot for him, like I said, most likely at shortstop now that they have Profar at second base, I don't know if they'll toy with him in the outfield, but I do still like his bat in the minors. Let me see. He's only got one option left, so I think if they bring him up, they have to be pretty certain that they're going to keep him up.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good call. But, you know, if and we've no Profar's injury history, so it is not it's not inconceivable that Profar could miss an extended period of time, and Breda's the everyday second baseman and is a really hot pickup in Fab that week. You know, we saw Chapman had a brief DL stint last year, so maybe he could hop in there and play third. He did come up with Chapman, went on the DL last year. You know, if something were to happen to Matt Olson long term and they're just not satisfied with Canna, maybe Profar ends up playing first and Barreto plays second. So there's some ways for Barreto to get into the lineup, but unfortunately, he is off your reject radar outside of drafts and holds and best balls. Yeah, and Pinder, he's somebody that I've always kind of liked in daily lineup leagues because he has been eligible in the infield and the outfield. Should be that way again this year, and is pretty much like clockwork hitting high in the lineup against lefties. But again, he's pretty much on the DFS radar and your daily lineup leagues. So
the 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide, the Fantasy Benefit, is the largest and most complete fantasy draft guide on the market, with featured writers from Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Baseball HQ, Baseball Prospectus, and FanGraphs, and many more. You will get tons of information on how to start your own league, draft strategies for roto, points, categories, NFBC, best ball, and DFS. There are tiers for every position, and 30 team previews, including 30 team prospect previews, breaking down the top prospects from each team. There are ranks for every position, for prospects, for first-year player drafts. This is the most in-depth guide that fantasy baseball has to offer. And not only that, we'll be updating it all draft season in the ebook and PDF. You can get this on Amazon.com in ebook form for $7.50 or in paperback for $13.99. Don't want an ebook? Don't want a paperback? Just want a PDF? You can order it by emailing friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com and I will send you an updated copy every week until the start of opening day. Get your 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide called The Fantasy Benefit today.
Let's move on to the pitching rotation, which is
awful.
There's no other way. It's just not. I really don't know what's happening here. I mean, they signed Mike Fiers and Marco Estrada, which was good for me because that's somebody that when they were both with the Brewers, I kind of got them confused. And then even when they went their separate ways, every once in a while I'd be like, okay, Fiers is the one that was with Houston and Detroit. Estrada's been the one that's been with Toronto for a while. But they are similar pitchers, heavy fly ball pitchers who have run really hot and cold over their careers. They're in the perfect park for kind of how they're set up. Are they anything more than the last guy on your bench that the first time something hot comes off the waiver wire you're cutting?
No, I don't think so. And I just don't understand what Oakland's doing with their rotation. I mean, they kind of played with fire last year with kind of the same rotation, and then they made their way into the playoffs. But I don't think from year to year you can play this game. You know, I think the guy with the most upside in the rotation right now might be Daniel Mengden, who we talked about a lot on our podcast last year. But another guy that's waiting in the wings that might not be ready for opening day, but could make his way into the rotation is Jarrell Cotton. I think coming off of Tommy John surgery, he might be the most talented starter that's in the major leagues right now. But other than that, these are guys that you can stream. These are guys that should be available on the waiver wire. If they aren't, then, you know, you're probably winning your ratios, because if they're owned and they're started every week, then you probably have a problem.
Yeah, when you look at their roster resource page, their projected disabled list, for me anyway, is more interesting than their projected rotation. You know, Cotton is somebody that I know you and I both like. He's coming from off Tommy John, isn't going to be ready to start the year, but could maybe in May he could be up. Probably more realistically June. You know, maybe the A's, if they're competing again, try to get him back in there. But I personally don't, in redraft, don't like investing in guys coming off of Tommy John. But, you know, if Cotton's just sitting out there and I'm able to scoop him up for cheap on Fab, you know, I'll give him a shot. You know, Cotton's somebody that once you're in, he keeps pulling you back in. You know, Daniel Gossett is not going to pitch this season, most likely. He's also recovering from Tommy John. Sean Manaea is the big one here. Shoulder surgery, also probably out for 2019. Andrew Triggs coming off the thoracic outlet syndrome. Somebody that I've liked in the past, but I'm definitely not touching, coming off of thoracic outlet surgery, even once he does return, if he can even return this season. But it is kind of funny that their projected disabled list for pitchers is definitely more exciting than their projected rotation. You brought up Mangdon. He's somebody that had a really hot stretch in the middle of the season last year and then gave it all back in the course of like three starts, I feel like, as somebody that in a couple leagues and was like, I know it's coming to an end, but maybe I can sneak one more start out of it. And all the goodness he gave us over, I feel like it was a course of a month. And
yeah, at least.
Gave it all back.
Yeah.
But, you know, Frankie Montas and Chris Bassett, not interested. Just, I only sure, but I'm not interested. Who I am interested in, and I think a lot of people are, is Jesus Luzardo, not projected to start the season in the rotation, but could very quickly find his way up, especially with, you know, we just went over what the A's have, and especially with all their other injury issues, he could definitely find his way into the major league rotation. Are you paying, again, there's a little bit, that's the other thing, is people are starting to catch on, he's starting to go in pretty much every NFBC draft. Where are you at on Jesus Luzardo? Are you paying the price now, knowing that he's not, if you're drafting this week, are you paying the price knowing that there's a chance he doesn't pitch for the first, you know, 6 weeks to maybe even 2 full months?
Yeah, especially in like a best ball situation. This is a guy that can provide you with probably, you know, top 60, I would say, starting pitching numbers. Even if it's only in the second half of the season, that's a guy that can catch you up in some ratios, you know, kind of pull you away as well. So, yeah, he's a guy that I've targeted. Him and Forrest Whitley are guys that I am going out of my way to get. Just because, you know, I know the beginning of the season might start off rocky for both of them. They might not even see the field. But as soon as they get called up, I don't think that they give that back. And I completely see them, you know, taking over this rotation spot. And then just kind of looking through the roster resource page, I saw a guy that kind of stuck out to me, Parker Bridwell. I was big on him last year, actually, in best ball. I really liked what I saw, and he never even saw the field. So I'll probably dip back in the well and pick him in a, you know, a really deep best ball situation. But he's a guy to keep an eye on, especially over the guys that we've talked about already.
Yeah, Luzardo is somebody I think I could see him going for a bargain, you know, right around the time this season starts, because the Athletics actually play in the little 2-game series with the Mariners over in Japan a week before everyone else does. And I don't see them carrying Luzardo, you know, over there. They're only obviously going to need 2 starting pitchers. They're going to want to probably, I would imagine, keep him back and get as many reps in as he can before the season starts. So I could see it being a scenario where, you know, the Athletics announce their opening day roster for this 2-game series and Luzardo isn't on it and people start letting him slide in drafts. That's when I'm probably going to pounce back in. I think I'd pay the price right now, going about 254 in the NFBC draft champions that have happened so far this month. You know, it's a risk that I'm willing to take because I really do like the skills with Luzardo. And I do think once he's up, he's going to stay up because I believe in the talent, number one. But we're looking at it right now, and the Athletics are just dying. I mean, they need somebody to really take one of these 5 rotation spots and run with it. So I really like Luzardo. I'm fine with paying the price of 254. And like I said, I could see that dropping depending on how they kind of work their roster for the 2-game opening series. So outside of that, I mean, you know, Aaron Brooks, no thanks. So there's really nothing in AAA. Like I said, I do think one of these guys, you know, maybe pops for like a month, like we saw Mangdon last year, but not interested in redraft. Fires and Estrada are the guys that you maybe throw on the end of your bench and you're going to cut them after their first bad start. So I'm not interested at all. So let's move into the bullpen, which is very interesting. It's quietly one of the better, or maybe not quietly, but it's definitely one of the better bullpens in the American League, led by Blake Treinen, going as a top 5 closer this year in most drafts. Are you paying that price for Blake Treinen?
I usually don't pay that price for any closer, so I might not be the guy to ask. However, I did in the main event last year just because I got behind on so many other pitching stats that I had to catch up somehow. But going into this year, I don't see myself drafting one of the top closers, and that's the price you have to pay for Blake Treinen. Right now, going around pick 60, he's a guy that, you know, he provided pretty much everything that you needed last year. He had all the saves you needed. He still struck out people. And, you know, I really think that this year they're going to take a step back. The A's will. So therefore the 38 saves maybe turns into like 32, which isn't that much of a difference. But at the end of the season, you know, those six saves could be the difference between, you know, first and third place in your league. So the 100 Ks is nice. It's pretty much an elite closer. But like I said, I'd rather take my chances with the middle guys in the closing market than have to pay up for, you know, one of the top guys.
Yeah, Trinum was somebody I actually ended up with a lot of shares of last year because I really liked the skills. I thought he needed to get out of Washington. Washington had mismanaged their bullpen so bad for so many years. I think it just kind of messed with him. He needed a fresh start. And it was really interesting to see how Oakland used them because he was their primary closer, but they would also – he got a lot of – you know, multi, you know, more than three out saves. And that helps, you know, over the course of a you know, 6 month season, that really helps lower your ratios when you're getting those couple extra outs that the other closers aren't getting. The strikeouts were kind of what worried me, but you know, he was able to get not quite Edwin Diaz, Craig Kimbrel level strikeouts, but it was definitely good enough. Obviously the .7 ERA is not going to continue, but I really like Trinan. Again, I'm in the same boat with you. I usually don't go invest in a top five closer, but he's somebody that if I were to in a given situation, I wouldn't mind paying the price for Trinan, especially since we don't really know where Kimbrel's going. Kenley Jansen definitely scares me. So Edwin Diaz, there's concerns there with his workload last year. So I really like Blake Trinan. Don't think I'll end up with him anywhere, but if you are somebody that does like to invest in a top five closer, I think Trinan is about as safe as they come. And the rest of this bullpen, there's a lot of guys that are interesting. You know, Joaquin Soria, Lou Trevino, Ryan Buchter is an interesting lefty. Yusmira Petit is a nice, like, multi-inning guy. Ryan Dahl's got some nice stuff. Liam Hendricks, again, for a multi-inning guy. I can see somebody, probably Soria and Buchter, emerging as the big hold guys out of this bullpen. But with the way Oakland likes to mix and match, it could be a really nice bullpen if you're in a holds league. But outside of that, I guess Soria would be the first one to get the first crack if something were to happen to Trinan injury-wise. Is there anybody in this bullpen that's on your redraft radar in 15 teams outside of Trinan?
Yeah, I like you said, I really like the bullpen. Soria is definitely the first guy in line. They also have Fernando Rodney, which is just, you know.
Yeah, sorry. How did I forget Fernando Rodney?
So, you know, that kind of blocks the guy that I really liked. I really liked Lou Trevino coming into the season before they traded for Rodney and, you know, signed Soria. So, you know, that guy was really good last year. And I was looking forward to drafting him as like the eighth inning guy. And, you know, I'm still probably going to draft him. Like you said, it should be a good bullpen for holds. I might end up having two of the guys that are in this bullpen for just holds leagues. Maybe like a Soria, Trevino. And then, like you said, Ryan Buchter, right now he's the only left-handed guy in this bullpen. So that tells me he should get a lot of work. He's actually the only left-handed guy on the major league roster with Sean Manaea on DL. So that's a little interesting whenever you kind of look deeper into the box score and say, you know, this guy isn't that good, but he's their only lefty. So you might say that will probably change throughout the year. They should probably acquire a left-handed pitcher sometime. And then, of course, Lizardo coming up. But, yeah, the bullpen itself, it's really deep. And there should be a lot of value out of it.
Yep. I fully agree. So before we sign off, anything else for the Athletics, pitching-wise or back to hitting?
No. I mean, I just hope that they don't win the division.
The Rangers aren't going to, so you if you
don't know that.
I think I do know that. I've seen the Rangers projected pitching rotation. And okay.
So the Rangers or the A's?
Oh god, I'll say the A's because they get the ballpark advantage, even though that's not really
that's a cop out.
That's a cop out, but but it's, man, they're both just god awful. All right. Anyway, signing off for Colin Weatherwax. I'm Randy Haynes. You can follow us on Twitter at RTH222 and at CAWeatherwax13. This is probably the two of us, our last team preview before the stretch run. We're down to the last couple here at FWFB. So We will catch up with you guys as draft season rolls along. Thanks for listening.